You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
Twelve 17 in the studio now, Dr. Hartley Milchin. Very nice to see you again, Hartley.
Thanks for having me again.
Well, it's always always good to get all the latest information on better foot health, I guess, foot care, that sort of thing. Now, I know today you wanted to start by talking about toenail fungus infections that do plague quite a few people, I would think, especially in their later years, fair to say.
Well, approximately 25% of the Canadian population either suffers or will suffer from a nail fungus problem.
All ages? Is that the figure for all ages?
It's generally as we age, but we do see younger people with it as well. But it's generally mid-30s on up that we'll see it more frequently.
Where does it come from?
Fungus starts as a skin infection, most commonly known as athlete's foot. And where it starts is usually between the baby toe there. And it gets itchy, it gets red. If untreated or unnoticed, it can spread to one of the toenails. And it usually starts at the top of the nail and works its way down. Mm-hmm. Now, my tips for people to try and avoid picking up a fungus. Number one, when we dry our feet after a shower or a bath, we dry the top, we dry the bottom, but rarely do we dry in between the toes. That's important because fungus likes warm, dark, moist environments, so in between the toes is a perfect breeding ground, and so are shoes and socks. Yeah. And then public places like public swimming pools or showers at the health club. And we also see a lot of fungal infections derived from nail spas. People who are getting pedicures.
Oh.
And the instrumentation is not sterilized and fungus gets passed on. So what happens is the fungus invades the nail, usually at the top. It'll start turning color, whether it's brown or yellow, and then eventually thickens. You'll see some streaks. And at that point, some topical preparations will work to eradicate the fungus. And it's not an overnight thing. It's a very slow process. Once it passes the cuticle area, then it's in the root of the nail where the topicals won't work. And historically, as practitioners, we used to prescribe an oral medication called Lamisil. The problem these days, most people don't prescribe it and most patients don't want to take it simply because there is a potential for liver side effects.
Liver side effects, really?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, with any medication, there's a potential for side effect. It doesn't mean you're going to get it. I prescribed it for hundreds of people and never had a problem. But there is the possibility. So most people think that the risk outweighs the benefit. So a lot of practitioners, whether dermatologists, family doctors, podiatrists, don't generally prescribe it anymore. Now, as time goes on, the nail fungus can spread. It can spread to adjacent nails. It could spread to all 10 toenails. It could also spread to the fingernails. And most people think it's a cosmetic problem because the nails turn thick, they turn brittle, they turn colored, and people become embarrassed about it. But as time goes on, outside of being a cosmetic problem, it can become a worse problem because as the nail thickens, it may dig into the side of the nail where the skin is, and because the shoes and socks are such a dirty environment, you can get a secondary bacterial infection.
Oh, on top of the
which
fungus.
Has to be treated with antibiotics, etc., and if you're diabetic or have bad circulation, it can really pose a problem. So we like to get it treated, and the newest way of treating it is using laser.
Mm-hmm.
What the laser does is, number one, it's safe and it's effective. There's no known side effects. What the laser does, it works on two principles, light and heat. And we believe that the heat eradicates the fungus. And generally, we're doing one treatment every 6 weeks, 4 or 5 treatments right now. Some take less, some take more. It depends how long the fungus has been there, how many nails are affected. But even if a person comes in with one affected toenail, we're going to treat all 10 simply because the fungus could be on adjacent nails without the human eye being able to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to eradicate all the fungus at once. The treatment takes about 15 minutes, and the results are fabulous. But like I warn people, like with any medication or any treatment, there is a small failure rate. Not everything works for everybody, and I'm upfront with patients telling them that. But our success rate has been very high, much higher than it was when we used to give the oral medication. So I'm really pleased about that because this treatment is safe and it's effective.
And if you and left untreated, I guess could be quite, I mean, what's the ultimate thing that could happen if you left it totally untreated? I don't know why you would, but I mean, how bad can it get is really what I'm asking.
Well, outside of the embarrassment of it, because most people that have it won't show their feet, they won't wear sandals, etc. Yeah. But as I described, there's the chance of bacterial infection, and there's also the chance of the fungal infection spreading to the fingernails, which you can't cover up like you can.
Oh, really?
Toes and shoes. So it can become a very embarrassing, painful problem.
Just don't leave it. I mean, get some
treatment. Don't leave
it.
And if your family doctor says, let's remove the toenails, don't.
Remove the toenails?
It's done. Believe it or not, it's very antiquated. I warn people, don't have that done because you're not treating the root of the nail. So when the nail does grow back, it's going to grow back in the exact same way because you haven't eradicated the fungus.
Yeah, which would still be there even as the nail grows back.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Okay, now let me move to part two here, Hartley. And part two is walking 32 kilometers. What should one do to prepare one's feet for such a feat?
That is a feat. First and foremost, you must wear a good shock-absorbing shoe.
Right. Okay.
Not a no-brand name shoe. A good quality shock-absorbing shoe.
Right.
Real important. A lot of people wear either two pairs of socks or they wear what Libby had mentioned, the socks that wick the moisture away from the foot, which is a good idea. A lot of people take a spare pair in case they sweat a lot. Some of us do. Now, one of the biggest problems outside of fatigue of the feet is, and this happens a lot in runners and people who walk long distance, is toenail trauma.
Yeah.
Where you can traumatize your nail, it'll turn black, it'll turn blue, some of them even fall off. And sometimes, and we see this quite often in runners, they'll damage the nail root and the nail never grows back properly. So it might grow thick and discolored. And it almost looks like a fungus toenail.
Yeah.
So what I advise people to do is a couple things they can try. One is stuff the front part of the shoe where the toe set with cotton, or if you're real resourceful and you can find some lamb's wool, which is softer than cotton.
Ballet dancers.
Right.
Yeah.
Put it in the front of the shoe to sort of protect the toes from the trauma.
Well, how are the toes having trauma foisted upon them? What's happening?
Well, what's happening generally is as the feet, I guess, sweat a bit, they're moving forward. They're slipping forward,
and
they're hitting the end of the shoe. That's what the problem
is. So the
is.
Nail is banging into the front of
That's
your shoe.
That's right.
Yeah.
The other thing people do, which I think is a great idea, there's something that's sold in drugstores in the foot care section. They're called toe caps, and generally they're made out of a silicone gel, and they're impregnated with mineral oil, and they keep the toe soft. And what it looks like is just like a little rubber thimble that you put on the end part of your toe.
On each toe?
On each toe, and protect it that way.
Good grief, that sounds like a lot of trouble.
No, it's not. No? It slips right on.
Okay.
It's real easy, but it's worth it because if you damage the toenails, they're damaged for good.
Yeah. Well, that's, and they get damaged by banging into the front of the shoe. So
continuous
micro-trauma
is what
feel,
we call it.
You would feel pain and know something is wrong, one assumes.
Not necessarily, because when you're walking long distance or running long distance, the endorphins are circulating. You feel no pain.
As it were.
So chances are you're not going to feel the toes hitting
All
the
right,
end
now,
of the
here,
shoe.
Here's the other tip that I've been trying to work my way through. Vaseline. What if you were to smear Vaseline over your entire foot?
It's not a bad idea because Vaseline protects from friction. So you'll notice that professional boxers will wear Vaseline around under their eyes and their face to avoid the cuts.
From the glove,
A lot of the swimmers put Vaseline on to sort of cut down on the friction. And I think it's a good idea on the feet as well. It doesn't feel lovely.
Well, that's what I would worry, that I would feel unlovely, if you get my meaning, for 32 kilometers with my feet sliding around inside my sneakers.
It's possible you're going to feel unlovely.
Yeah.
But it will do the trick.
I do that anyway from day to day. But you really think it's better than not using it. Is that what you're saying?
For a lot of people. Me personally, I don't like that greasy feeling on any part of my body, so I wouldn't be using it.
But
I'd
if
have
you were
different choices.
But if you were susceptible to blisters, you'd be more inclined to use it. Would that not be
Absolutely.
The point?
It's going to certainly cut down on the friction and protect your feet for sure.
What about, like, foot powder and stuff like that? Do you have anything to do with it? That's
not
after
really.
The fact, really, isn't it? That's after you're trying to put your feet back into some kind of shape after you've walked 32 kilometers.
Right.
What about the way you walk?
Well, it depends if you have a problem with your feet, an imbalance. Yeah. You know, we've talked about pronation. If you're wearing orthotics or not wearing orthotics, one of the things I recommend as far as shoes is that you don't wear a cross trainer shoe. I don't like cross trainers. They're made for like
little
every
bit of this,
activity,
little bit of that. Yeah.
But they don't work real well. A good walking shoe is wonderful. And it doesn't have to be a running shoe per se, although running shoes breathe a little bit more. They're a little bit lighter. But for the average person, just the plain old athletic walking shoe will work just great.
So that's it. Armed with all of that, one should be okay.
That
theoretically,
probably a little flask of whiskey wouldn't hurt in the backpack. Oh, but Libby said no backpack.
No back. That's for later after we commiserate once the... have you ever walked 32 kilometers?
I would probably have difficulty walking 1 kilometer.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
There's a word for guys like me. Generally lazy.
See? Oh, so it's attitudinal. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. Okay. I think about it. Don't get me wrong.
Would you think seriously about it? Not that seriously, apparently.
I would think seriously. You know what I would like to see?
What's that?
I'd like to see a walk for prostate cancer.
Well, aren't there? I don't think there's a walk for prostate cancer.
I don't
cancer.
Think so.
Yeah.
I have an issue with it.
Yeah.
For instance, if I want my PSA tested, my levels that blood tests, I have to pay for it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of men diagnosed with prostate cancer every year, and it can be fatal.
Yes, it can.
But I don't see any major walks happening on behalf of that particular cancer.
Well, the next time we have the prostate cancer people in, we'll ask
I'm
going to
walk
that.
32 kilometers. I promise
for
you.
For that?
For that, I will.
Okay.
I'll start training this afternoon.
Well, then maybe I can give you some tips.
Exactly.
Because I will have survived the 32-kilometer
right.
walk for cancer. All right. That's a deal. Now, if you have any questions about foot health and foot care generally speaking, or you want to comment on what you've already heard, we like it both ways. Doesn't much matter. Here are the numbers to call, 416-360-0740 or 866-740-4740.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
Dr. Hartley Milchen is here, and we're talking about matters of the foot, because, of course, Dr. Milchen is a podiatrist, and that's his field of endeavor. He's the expert. One last question of the expert, if I may, Hartley, about the walking of the 32 kilometers, or running for that matter, whatever kind of physical activity you get involved in. Is there any special trick, or do you have any special advice for people on how they would trim their toenails?
Well, I wouldn't leave the toenails longer than normal, which some people believe is a good idea to protect them. But it's not a good idea because if the front of the foot is hitting the edge of the shoe, the first thing that's going to hit is that toenail, and then you're pushing it back to where the root is behind the cuticle area, and you have a greater risk of damaging it. And as long as we're on that topic, if I may give your listeners a tip, a lot of people believe that they need to cut their toenails straight across, otherwise they're going to get ingrown toenails.
Well, in my practice,
I see more people with ingrown toenails that cut their nails straight across. Toenails are like hair. You can't cut them all the same. They have different shapes, different consistencies, different thicknesses. Some people who have curved nails, they have to cut a bit rounded or cut a little bit of the corner out to avoid getting ingrown toenails.
So that's a myth in a way, isn't it?
It is. It's an old-time myth, but these days we see things differently, and toenails have to be treated differently depending on what they look like.
Well, how does one get an ingrown toenail in the first place then?
Well, usually it's a curvature. There's no real answer of what it's caused from, but a lot of people believe it's shoes. Squeezing the toe, you're pressing the skin into the nail, but the nail grows wider than the space allotted for it in the skin, and it cracks open the skin, and you can get redness.
So it's not a trimming thing either way, really, is
not
what you're
saying. Not per se, but you have a higher incidence of getting that ingrown toenail if your nail doesn't accept it being cut straight across or doesn't call for it being cut straight across.
Essentially, then, you're cutting the toenail to fit the contour of the toe.
Right.
Just like you do.
The space allotted.
Just like you do with your fingers.
Right.
Okay?
Right. Exactly.
All right. There we have it. Let's get on with some other issues here. Well, here's a toe question from Wendy calling from Baltimore. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, dear. I'm sorry. It's the first time I've ever done this. So.
Well, that's good. Thanks for calling. Yeah, go ahead.
Last year I was in hospital for 6 weeks, and I had cellulitis. When I came, home, I was still wearing socks because I couldn't get shoes on. And then I noticed my big toenails were cracked, and they still are, and I wondered what I can do with them.
Cracked?
Yeah. I'm looking at them now.
Yeah.
Right down the middle.
Certain systemic problems, for example, lung infections, anemia, cellulitis, which is basically a blood infection.
My feet were swollen like...
Right, that happens quite often with cellulitis. But certain systemic disorders...
I do have lupus.
...can show up in the nails, whether it's, for example, psoriasis, where they become very brittle and spoon-shaped. You may see streaks, you may see splits. It's difficult to pinpoint exactly what it is.
Well, that's okay.
Big toenails can take up to 1 year to grow fully.
Yeah.
Healthy.
So you got to be patient. Okay. Otherwise, it may reoccur a few times, then stop, or it may occur for the rest of your life. There's no predictability with it.
So I should stop worrying about it.
You should stop worrying about it.
Maybe that's the bottom line, I guess, Wendy. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye. It's always great to get an answer to a medical question, and the answer is stop worrying about it. This is great. Doc, it hurts when I do this. Remember the old joke? Well, don't do that. here's Mary calling from Uxbridge. Mary, do you have a question?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead, please.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a bunion on my foot, and recently it has formed sort of a watery bubble on top that is like spongy. And I don't know, I've never had anything like that form on top of it before. It's about the size of a toonie.
All right. Dr. Milton, what about that?
I see that quite often in advanced stages of bunions or arthritic big toe joints where... You know what a bunion looks like. It's got that huge bump behind the big toe area, and it constantly rubs on shoes. So what the body does is it tries to protect the underlying bone. So it forms a fluid-filled bag underneath underneath the skin. Quite often we call it a bursa or bursitis. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it tries to protect the bone. It's like a pillow under there. Mm-hmm. And until the underlying factor is dealt with, that is going to remain there. So you can have cortisone injections. You can have a drain. But as long as that bone is not the way it should be, it'll continually grow. And quite often when I do my bunion surgeries in the office and my first tiny little opening, as you know, I use just minor little openings, it'll be right on top of that bubble and it drains and it's like a gel. It's not like water. It's like a gel.
Yeah.
And once I fix the bone problem, once I repair the bunion, that never grows back again.
Well, what are you doing to that? When you do that with these little incisions, are you just moving the bone? Are you relocating the bone? Is that kind of what it is?
Well, most people think a bunion is just a bump that grows on the side of the foot. Yeah. I come in and I shave it down and it's gone. Well, the first truth is I only shave in the morning before I leave the house. I never shave at the office. But it's more complex than that. The bone is out of alignment in there. The whole joint is out of alignment.
What you're seeing is the bone then.
Right. That's okay. The head of the bone. But all what right. We need to do is realign the bone in there. So the way I do it is, first of all, I use local freezing instead of general anesthesia, and I don't put anybody in the hospital. I make usually three very, very tiny little openings. I don't even use stitches, and I don't put in the pins, wires, screws, staples, and I don't cast people. And people walk in, they walk out about 20 minutes later. I realign the bone. I keep it in position with tape and a special shoe rather than a cast and crutches. And people are mobile. They can drive, they can walk, and I encourage them to do that because today in our busy lives, we can't stay in bed for 8 weeks.
Well, no.
With the traditional surgery, that's what happens.
Well, the trend will be going more, I would think, then the trend generally will be going more towards the way you do this than the way medical doctors per se would do it in a major operation in a hospital?
Absolutely. There
What's
are
holding them back?
Well, because it's more difficult for the doctor to perform the procedure minimally invasive, but it's far easier for the patient. And some people are set in their ways. And the way they learned it initially is the way they continue. And they're not open to new ideas and they don't see outside the box. But if you look at medical stories, you'll see a lot of them are minimally invasive, like taking the gallbladder out through a small opening in the belly button.
Yeah.
And there's reasons for that. You heal faster, there's less risk, there's less pain, less swelling, etc.
All right. Thank you very much for your question, Mary. Good luck with that bunion. You'll have to get it fixed, eh?
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye. Here's Peter calling from Toronto. Do you have a question, Peter?
Well, I'd like to make a comment, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
I would like to thank the doctor for talking about rounding the toenails. All chiropodists and podiatrists cut them square.
Really?
You end up banging your feet in bed, like up and down, because at the back of the toe, you think they want to make it that they're going to cut your foot off, you know? But I found this angel. She does it round. I don't have the problem.
Is there a controversy about this, straight cut or a curved cut? Good grief.
There's a controversy in my mind because, I assimilate it the same as hair. We can't cut everybody's hair the same way, and it's the same with the nails. They grow differently. They have different consistencies, different thicknesses, and I find those people who believe you must cut them straight across end up with the corners digging in, and they're the ones with the ingrown toenails.
Oh, it's so terrible.
So what I do with my patients, and I instruct them, once I see their nails, I instruct them on the proper way to cut them.
Yeah, because,
and it avoids problems.
Okay, but it's not the old taboo thing where everybody told us, you got to cut them straight across or you're going to be in big trouble. Okay, Peter.
I thought it was just for diabetics. I am diabetic. I don't know if I mentioned that.
Does that have any bearing on it?
Well, you don't want to cut too deeply. When I say round it off, you just nip a little tad off the corners.
Don't go
That's
crazy
it. You're
about
not going to go deep right down the side of the nail because you've obviously got to be careful. Not only diabetics, but anybody has to be careful. But if you're instructed properly and you're using proper instrumentation for it, You should be able to cut your nails effectively and comfortably.
Okay. Thank you, Peter, very much.
Hey, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that call as well. When you're, how many people, once again, the subject of bunions comes up, this is a fairly major problem for a lot of people, isn't it?
It's a huge problem. Bunions and heel pain are what I see mostly in my practice. Mm-hmm. It's more of a problem for women, obviously, because of the shoes they
wear. It's the shoe, isn't it?
Well, the shoe doesn't per se cause it. We both have the ability, men and women both have the ability to form bunions because of the way we walk and the imbalances. The only difference is because of women's footwear, it aggravates the problem. So the women that are wearing their heels every day and they're squishing their toes into the narrow fronts, etc., they're the ones that are going to develop it sooner and worse. So, of course, we see a lot more women.
Yeah, more, of course. And you get to the point where if a woman has a bunion that's really protruding, they can't wear those fancy shoes anymore anyway.
Oh, they still will. Trust me.
Well, I mean, they'll try, will they?
Trust me.
Okay. If you have a question for Dr. Hartley Milchin, our resident podiatrist, give us a call right here at 416-360-0740 or 866-740-4740.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
I'm going to go back and play a little catch up here in terms of trimming one's nails, one's toenails. Hartley, you were saying don't use the regular nail clip type things. Use the plier type?
Yeah, the ones that look like pliers, the more professional type, because they're far more versatile and they can cut it rounded much better than the other ones can.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Let's get back to the phones and let's see. Here's Rita calling from Etobicoke. Rita, do you have a question?
Oh, I sure do. I never thought I'd get through. Under my two big toes, doctor, my right toe is right in the middle, and I actually see like an eye, and it always develops hard skin that I literally have to shave off, and it hurts like heck. And even the other toe, it's a little lower, and I have to just keep doing this. Now, I understand that you would prefer we use those stones, but that hurts. When my feet are damp, that's when I can shave it off, and I can actually see that it's like a root in the middle of this. Can't that be removed?
Well,
told me no.
Well, first of all, you should see a podiatrist and see exactly what it is, because it sounds like it could be a number of different things. It could be a simple callus. It could be what we call a plugged sweat duct. It could be a wart. It could be a number of things. And I would advise you to have it looked at just so that you know what it is and what your treatment options are.
I saw one podiatrist and he said that it's just a callus and there's nothing that I can do. But it's that root that I see, that I thought that can be removed.
Well, maybe you better try another podiatrist. I mean, it's got to be something, doesn't it, doctor?
It could be something. If it's a plain friction callus, the advice I've given before using the pumice stone is probably the best advice. But if it's something deeper, chances are they don't have a root, but it could be what we call a nucleated or under so much friction that there's a little eye underneath there, and to feel better, sometimes we just scoop that little eye out very easily.
Okay, thanks. Thanks very much for that, Rita.
Thanks, doctor.
Okay, here's Margaret from Burlington. Margaret, do you have a question?
Oh, hello. My husband has a problem with his heel. He's had a verruca, which I think is also called a plantar's wart. It's on the side of his heel, and he's had it now for over a year. It's being treated with Fusidin, and the podiatrist has been treating it by sort of cutting it back. But it still looks terrible. It looks like a volcano. The middle of it is very light pink and shiny, and the edges are kind of gray. And it's really quite large and ugly.
Hmm. Doctor?
It's not painful.
Yeah.
If it's truly verruca, or as you say, plantar's warts, I'm sure it wouldn't be treated with Fusidin, because Fusidin's an antibiotic and a wart is a virus, so it would be ineffective.
Okay. Well, it was his GP that treated it with Fusidin, and then he went to see a podiatrist, and he was cutting it.
Yeah. There's literally hundreds of treatments for warts, and unfortunately, the virus has a mind of its own. So there's some old wives' tales, like using duct tape and placing a copper penny on it, or putting a piece of paper on it, taking it out in the backyard and burning it. There's all kinds of over-the-counter preparations. All of them are basically the same. They have salicylic acid in it, which tends to burn it.
Yes, he's tried that as well. Salicylic acid didn't work.
Well, there's liquid nitrogen. I ask my patients to help the immune system fight the virus by taking 10,000 international units of vitamin A twice a day, which is not harmful. It's a vitamin, but it, for some reason, it does help the immune system try and fight this virus.
He also has lymphoma. Do you think that could be impacting it?
Well, he could have a decreased immune system, obviously, and that's what's probably keeping it around longer. As far as we treat plantar's wart with laser now, but when they tend to be that large, it tends to be a challenge. And really, the large ones are really a challenge. And what you'll find is that eventually you'll treat it enough, it'll just all disappear at once. It's very strange how that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, it's a virus that needs to be treated, because it can spread to anywhere you have skin on your body. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like if your husband's had it for a year and it hasn't spread, that's a good thing. But you have to stay on top of it.
Yeah, and should it be kept covered?
Well, if you're using a salicylic acid preparation over the counter from the pharmacy, I would do it at night and cover it.
Mm-hmm.
They're also highly contagious.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, right. I don't want to get one.
Well, if you're showering in the same shower, if he's showering first, have him spray it down with perhaps some Lysol.
Oh, okay. And he should take 10,000 milligrams of vitamin E twice daily?
Vitamin A.
International units.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, it's the standard dosage, 10,000 IUs.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Margaret, very much.
Thank you very much.
Here is Mike calling from Castor Center. Mike, do you have a question?
Yes. Comment what the doctor said about a year for the toenails to grow back.
Oh, yeah.
I agree with that. I've got the exact problem he's talking about. They turn black, especially the large toenail, and it works its way down. It takes about a year, and eventually the toenail will come off. And you have to start all, and it starts to grow back again. I went to the doctor, and they gave me Lamisil. I had an allergic reaction to Lamisil. It gave me hives. So he prescribed Sporinox. And I took Sporinox. You have to take it for like 6 weeks. And I took it, and it alleviated the situation, because I had even my small toenails. They were very, very thick on one side, very thin on the other. But then it came back again about 9 months later, it started to come back again, and I had to take Sporinox again. The last time I went there, and I had two ingrown toenails in between that, the last time I went there, he tested it, sent it out to the lab to be tested, and they said it came back negative. So now we don't know what to do with it, and again, I'm about to lose another toenail. It's very aggravating. It's not a pretty thing to look at, and it's been going on, I'm almost 60, it's been going on for probably 10 years, probably.
Let's get some comments from Dr. Milton.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of doing the test, the scrapings of the nails, because there's a lot of false positives, a lot of false negatives, and you never really know whether you're coming or going. But it, in a lot of cases, as I mentioned before, if you do constant micro trauma to those nails, whether you're a long-distance walker or a long-distance runner, you're going to lose those nails. You've damaged the root, or the what we call the matrix of the nail, and it is now going to grow differently than it did before, and it may fall off. And taking Sporinox may not help you at all, because if it's not a fungus and it's indeed a problem with the root, the Sporanox or the Lamisil isn't going to affect it at all.
The amazing thing is the nail comes back perfectly normal looking, and it's about 3/4 of the length, which, as you say, takes about 3/4 of the year to get there. And then all of a sudden, you see a little spot starting to develop, and it continues to grow, and it actually works its way in. And if you put something in there between the skin and the nail and pull it out, it's a very pungent smell, like it's rotting, decaying in there.
Oh.
And it's a very weird situation, but it doesn't hurt. It just eventually results in the nail coming off. And the last time I had the toenail problem, he said, cut it straight across your toenails. Don't curve it. He said, that's probably why you're having an ingrown toenail problem. And now you're telling me that, you know, to curve it. And that's what I thought, because I was curving it to the curvature of the toe, and everyone is different.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
Treat it that way.
All right. Let's get a bottom line bit of advice here for you, Mike.
Yeah. The thing is, you don't want to keep taking the Sporanox. I know Sporanox is a pulse dosage system, but you don't want to keep taking it, especially if you're worried about the potential side effects of it. So probably discontinue that.
Yeah.
Is there anything else besides Lamisil or Sporanox you would recommend, Doctor?
Well, there's laser now, which has no side effects and is quite effective.
And in fact might work in this kind of a case, is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, it's quite possible. Yeah. It has a higher success rate than pills or any oral medication ever did. And the other thing is, the analogy I give to my patients is, just because we clear up the fungal infection doesn't mean you're not going to get it again. The analogy is like strep throat. You take the penicillin for 10 days, you get rid of the strep throat. It doesn't mean you're not going to get that bacterial infection again in your life. I can give you tips on how to cut down on the chances of possibly developing a fungal infection, but there's no guarantee that it's never going to come back.
Is the laser you're talking about specific in your area, or is it throughout Ontario?
I believe there's a few people in Ontario that have the laser, and the one I use is the Cutera Genesis laser. It's one of the more popular lasers.
Okay, is that information available on the internet, sir?
Yes, for sure. If you look under Cutera Genesis Plus.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for that, Mike.
Thank you.
And you have a website. Tell me what
yes,
the website is. Remind us all.
It's accentonfeet.com.
Accentonfeet.com.
Right.
Okay. Well, we have a lot more questions here. We'll have to save them for the next time the lines are full. There are a lot of people want to talk about issues of the feet. They're pretty important to us. We spend most of our time on them in any given day. And so if you don't have feet that are serving you well, you're not having a very good time, are you?
No. If your feet hurt, you hurt all over. That's for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for coming in once again.
It's always a pleasure.
Okay. Dr. Hartley Milchin. He is a doctor of podiatry, and he's in here every once in a while telling us all the latest information, offering a good advice on how to take care of our feet.
Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.